Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Viewers, we continue our journey into the critical appraisal of the collection and transmission history of the Quran. In this session, we shall look at the collection of the Quran, which has allegedly been taken place under the auspices of the Caliph Abu Bakr, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, and this has been reported in Ahadith. Now, in this session, we shall not only look at the primary narrative, which records the collection of the Quran under the Caliph Abu Bakr, we shall also take a look at two of the related narratives. And these narratives have a direct link with the main and the primary narrative. The first of these narratives, or the first category of these narratives, actually delineates a specific methodology of the collection of the Quran. And this collection methodology is not mentioned in the main narrative. And the second category of narratives is the one in which we find that a different person from Abu Bakr was responsible for the first collection of the Quran. And we shall, as I said, take a critical analysis and a critical look at both these related secondary narratives as well. Now, before I read out the primary text of the narrative, which has been recorded by Imam Bukhari in his Al-Jami Sahih, let me first summarize the contents of that narrative before you. It is reported that in 11 Hijri, the Battle of Yamama took place, and obviously this battle was between the Muslim forces and the false prophet, Musaylimah ibn Qazzab. And Khalid ibn Walid was the Muslim general, and he was successful in ravaging the forces of Musaylimah ibn Qazzab. However, during the process, it is reported that there were a number of memorizers who were killed, who were martyred in this battle. And the narrative says that Umar radiallahu anhu was very apprehensive of these casualties. So he came over to the Caliph Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu and convinced him or tried to pressurize him or to cajole him to the fact that the Quran must be collected because it had not been collected in writing it in one place. And with the death of memorizers in this battle, he feared that there would be casualties at other places as well. So with this, there was a fear that a part of the Quran might be lost. Hence, it was imperative that the Quran should be collected in writing in one place. Now, the narrative records that Abu Bakr showed some hesitancy. And his opinion was that something which has not been done by the Prophet himself, why should they do it? But later on, it is reported that he called over Zayd ibn Thabit radiyallahu anhu, and he actually asked him that he should undertake this job. And he said that Umar had advised him to do so. Now, it is reported that Zayd himself showed the same reluctance as shown by Abu Bakr, and with the same reason, that why should they do something which the Prophet never did. However, it is said that later on, Zayd ibn Thabit got convinced, and he started to collect the Quran from various written and oral sources, and he started to compile them in sheets of paper, or sheets, as I said. It's not absolutely sure what the material was. The word we find in the Hadith narrative is suhuf. So it is said that he started to collect the Quran from various oral and written sources in these suhuf. And the narrative also reports that when he was collecting the Quran, he could not find a single verse or the last two verses of Surah At-Tawbah, and he could only find them with a single person. And the name of this person has been variously reported in different variants, as we shall see later on. Finally, the narrative also tells us that this collected Quran, or these collected suhuf or sheets, they remain with Abu Bakr during his own lifetime. Later, they were transferred to the Caliph Umar. And after Umar's death, they were transferred to his daughter, Hafsa, radiallahu anha, who was also the wife of the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So let me first read out this narrative before you, and then I'll read out its translation as well. حدثنا موسى بن اسماعيل عن ابراهيم بن سعد حدثنا ابن شهاب عن عبيد بن السباق ان زيد بن ثابت رضي الله عنه قال ارسل الي ابو بكر مقتل اهل اليمامه فاذا عمر بن الخطاب عنده قال ابو بكر رضي الله عنه ان عمر اتاني فقال ان القتل قد استحر يوم اليمامه بقراء القران واني اخشى أن يستحر القتل بالقرآن بالمواطن فيذهب كثير من القرآن وإني أرى أن تأمر بجمع القرآن قلت لعمر كيف تفعل شيئا لم يفعله رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم قال عمر هذا والله خير فلم يزل عمر يراجعني حتى شرح الله صدري لذلك ورأيت في ذلك الذي رأى عمر قال زعيد قال أبو بكر إنك رجل شاب عاقل لا نتهمك وقد كنت تكتب الوحي لرسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم فتتبع القرآن فاجمعه فوالله لو كلفوني نقل جبل من الجبال ما كان أسقل علي مما أمرني به من جمع القرآن. قلت كيف تفعلون شيئا لم يفعله رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم؟ قال هو والله خير. فلم يزل أبو بكر يراجعني حتى شرح الله صدري للذي شرح له صدر أبي بكر وعمر رضي الله عنهما. فتتبعت القرآن أجمعه من العصب واللخاف وصدور الرجال حتى وجدت آخر سورة التوبة مع أبي خزيمة الأنصاري، لم أجدها مع أحد غيره. لقد جاءكم رسول من أنفسكم عزيز عليكم ما عنتم حتى خاتمة براء فكانت الصحف عند أبي بكر حتى توفاه الله، ثم عند عمر حياته، ثم عند حفصة بنت عمر رضي الله عنه. Let me now read out the translation of this narrative before you. Zayd ibn Sabit al-Ansari narrated, and I'm skipping the chain of transmission in my translation. Abu Bakr sent for me at the time of the casualties among the warriors of the Battle of Yamama. Umar was present with Abu Bakr, who said, Umar has come to me and said, the Qurra have suffered heavy casualties during the battle with the people of Yamama, and I am afraid that there will be some casualties among the Qurra at other places, whereby a large part of the Qur'an may be lost. And I am of the opinion that you should order for its collection. I asked Umar, how can I do something which God's messenger has not done? Umar said to me, by God, it is really a good thing. So Umar kept on trying to persuade me to accept this his proposal till God opened my bosom for it, and I had the same opinion as Umar's. Abu Bakr said to me, you are a wise young man, and we do not suspect you of any bad trait in your character. And you used to write the divine revelation for God's messenger. Therefore, look for the Quran and collect it. By God, if Abu Bakr had ordered me to shift one of the mountains from its place, it would not have been harder for me than what he had ordered me concerning the collection of the Quran. I said to both of them, how can you do a thing which the Prophet has not done? Abu Bakr said, by God, it is really a good thing. So he kept on pressing me about it until God opened my bosom for that for which he had opened the bosoms of Abu Bakr and Umar. Then I started locating the Quranic material, collecting it from the bark of palm trees, scapular bones, and from the memories of men. I found with Abu Khuzaimah al-Ansari the last part of Surah Tawbah, which I had not found with anybody else, and it was لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَنِتُّمْ, meaning, indeed, there has come to you a messenger from among yourselves. It grieves him that you should be in difficulty. To the end of the surah. These suhuf remained with Abu Bakr till his death, then with Umar till his death, and then with Hafsa, Umar's daughter. So, viewers, you have just heard the text of this narrative as Imam Bukhari has recorded in his Al-Jami al-Sahih, as well as its translation. And I had already summarized the contents of the narrative before you. The purpose of reading out the text and translation was just to lead credence to whatever I had summarized earlier. Now, we shall now critically analyze the text and the chain of narration of this narrative. And the methodology that we shall adopt in this regard is that we shall take a look at some of the criticisms which our contemporary or past scholars have presented, both on the text and on the chain of narration of this narrative. And then, if I have to add something to that criticism, or maybe in the form of corroborating it, or in the form of even rejecting it, I'll do so after I present each point of criticism by each of these authorities. So let me start off by critically analyzing the text of, or the matn of the narrative. And the first criticism that I shall present before you has in fact been presented by Tamanna Imadi, a contemporary scholar of the subcontinent. And he says that the way this narrative has been recorded shows that the whole event of the collection of the Quran, as it has been linked up with the Battle of Yamama, is highly improbable. He says it is highly improbable that this event took place. And for this, he points out the fact that the feeble nature of this transmission, or the feeble way in which this transmission has taken place, or this narrative, shows clearly that this event never took place, in his opinion. For this, he says that the most important thing that we need to find out and we need to see is that it was Zayd ibn Sabit, رضي الله عنه, who is the only reporter or the only narrator who has reported this whole story or this whole account of the collection of the Quran. There is not a single person other than Zayd ibn Sabit who has recorded this story the way we find it in Bukhari and some of the other collections. So therefore he says that this is something very strange in which there are a number of people involved, and we find that there's just one person who is reporting this. Now, Tamanna even goes further. He says that not only is this narrative recorded by a single individual, we even find that in the next step of the chain of narration, there is just one person who recorded it, and he's Ubaid ibn Sabbak. And beyond Ubaid ibn Sabbak as well, the third person, who is Ibn Shahab Zuhri, he is also the sole narrator. And obviously after Ibn Shahab Zuhri, the narrative proliferated. But in the first three steps of its transmission, we find single individuals reporting it. Now, although Tamanna is not technically used the word or the term, but we know that in religious parlance, such a narrative is called a gharib narrative. And let me read out the definition of a gharib narrative from the Muqaddimah of Ibn Salah, and we will come to know that a gharib narrative, although is something acceptable, however, in certain circumstances, it stands questionable. So Ibn Salah in Muqaddimah has recorded the definition of this gharib narrative, and he says, غريب متنا واسنادا وهو الحديث الذي تفرد برواية متنه راو واحد, which means it is a narrative which has been recorded, whose text has been reported by a single individual. So this is what the Muqaddimah of Ibn Salah says. Now perhaps the point which Tamanna is making here is that why is it that when so many people were involved in the collection of the Quran, and obviously we also know that not only this, we know that the collection of the Quran would have been an event. We would supposedly think that it would have attracted a lot of attention and many people would have narrated it. So why is it that just a single individual narrates this whole story, narrates this whole account? And he calls to question this by saying that this is something very improbable. Other people should have been involved or at least reporting this narrative. And we know that in the terminology of ahadith, when a narrative which should have been reported by a number of narrators, because the event which is reporting is something which should have attracted the attention of multiple people, it is strange when just a single person reports it. And as he has said, as I have already alluded to earlier on, not only this, the fact is that after Zayd, we find in the second and the third tier a single individual as well. So this is something which, according to Tamanna, casts serious doubt, the fact that the whole event took place or not. And this is what he says is a very, very feeble nature of transmission of an event which should have been recorded in a very, very wider capacity. Now, I would like to add here another aspect to what Tamanna has just said, and that is that it is equally strange that if we find Zayd ibn Sabit having over 40 students, and some of them are even in Medina, and he is a person who is transferring, as has been pointed out, to a single individual, and his name is Ubaid ibn Sabbak. So, for example, Hafiz Mizzi in his Tehzib al-Kamal has recorded the name of these several students of Zayd ibn Sabit, and I'm just going to read out those names for you, and you'll find out that many of these people are very known people, and they were right there in Medina. So the question arises, which I would like to add to the research of Tamanna Imadi, is that in the presence of these 40-odd students of Zayd ibn Sabit, why is it that just one of them, Ubaid ibn Sabbak, has reported this narrative or the text of this narrative from him? Viewers, I'm now going to read out a list of these students from a book which is very famous, the Tehzib al-Kamal of Hafiz Mizzi. And as you can see, the names of these students of Zayd ibn Sabit before you on the screen, I'm just going to read these names for you. And they are Aban ibn Usman ibn Affan, Anas ibn Malik, Bishr ibn Sa'id, Sa'd ibn al-Hajjaj, wa Mawlahu Sabit ibn Ubaid, Hujr al-Madriyu, Kharijat ibn Zayd ibn Sabit, Zabarqan ibn Amr ibn Umayyah al-Zamri. And it is also said that he did not meet him. That is Zabarqan ibn Amr. Zuhra, Sa'd ibn Malik, Abu Sayyid al-Khudri, Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, Suleiman ibn Zayd ibn Sabit, Suleiman ibn Yasar, Sahal ibn Abi Khasma, Sahal ibn Hunayf, Sahal ibn Sa'ad al-Sa'idi, Ta'us ibn Kaysan, Abbad ibn Sinan, who is the father of Abi Hubayra, Yahya ibn al-Abbad al-Ansari, Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab, Abdullah ibn Firoz al-Daylami, Abdullah ibn Yazid al-Khatmi, Abdurrahman ibn Shimasa, Ubaid ibn Sabbaq, Ajlan Mawla Fatima bint Utba ibn Rabi'a, Urwa ibn Zubair, Ata'a ibn Yasar, Al-Qasim ibn Al-Hassan, Al-Amali Al-Kufi, Al-Qasim ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, Qubaysa ibn Zuwayb, Qais, Walid Muhammad ibn Qais Al-Madani, Kathir ibn Afla, Kathir ibn Salt Al-Kindi, Mujammi ibn Zayd Al-Hijazi, Marwan ibn Al-Hakm, Muttalib ibn Abdullah ibn Hantab, Abu Salama ibn Abdurrahman ibn Awf, Abu Huraira, Ummu Sa'ad. So, viewers, have you just seen the list of the students of Zayd ibn Thabit? And as I said, this whole list lays further credence to the critique which has been presented by Tamanna Imadi, and he's absolutely right in telling us the fact that how is it that the nature of the event was such that it should have invoked a number of people reporting it. So not only we don't find a person other than Zayd ibn Thabit reporting this narrative or this text, in the next three tiers as well, we find just single individuals reporting this, and this becomes even grave when we find that there are a number of other students of Zayd ibn Thabit who were there, but he transmitted only to a single individual. Now, the second thing which comes to mind in this regard is that this improbability of the event being taking place has also been questioned by Tamanna Imadi through another premise. And this premise actually has a direct link to the first premise. And he says that how is it that the earliest hadith and history books of Muslims do not record this account? They do not record this account absolutely. And he points out certain books in this regard, which I'll just presently present before you. However, it needs to be understood that this second narrative, this second point actually, second premise, is directly linked to the first. So if the nature of this event is such that it is improbable, so this is further corroborated by the fact that early Muslim hadith compilers and early Muslim historians, they did not record this narrative. So this second part actually is something which becomes even more, it casts even a grave question on the whole issue. In this regard, Tamanna Imadi has pointed out that the first formal book of hadith of Muslims, the Mu'atta, is absolutely devoid of this narrative. Now here I'd like to add that this thesis by Tamanna is very strong, and this is because we know that Ibn Shahab Zuri was one of the informants of Imam Malik, one of his teachers. And also found in the Mu'atta of Imam Malik is a narrative, although it's a mursal one, in which the personalities of Ubayd ibn Sabbaq and Ibn Shahab Zuhri, both of them figure. So both of them are found in that narrative. So it is strange that when Ubayd ibn Sabbaq is mentioned with Ibn Shahab Zuhri, in a narrative, why at all did not Imam Malik mention another narrative in which both these narratives were present? And I would also like to add here the fact that in the Muwatta of Imam Malik, there is a section in which we find there are a number of narratives which relate to the Quran. So it is strange that there is a place within the Muwatta in which we find narratives concerning the Quran. It has, and I'll just read out some of the titles of these narratives. And it is strange that, in spite of this, the narrative of the collection of the Quran under Abu Bakr ta'ala anhu failed to find any mention here. So the Muwatta of Imam Malik, for example, it contains chapters or sections, as I said, which record narratives regarding the Quran. So one of them is Bab al-Amr bil-Wudu liman massal Quran, which means a chapter in which the issue of wudu being done for a person who touches the Quran is discussed. Then we have Bab al-Rukhsa fi qira'at al-Quran ala ghayri wudu, which means that if a person has to read the Quran, then there is a concession that he does not need to do wudu. Then we have another small section which says Bab ma ja'a fi tahsib al-Quran, and this means that this is a section in which the divisions of the Quran are discussed. And then we have Babu Majah fi Sujood al-Quran. It is a section in which the prostrations are discussed, which need to be carried out by a person who recites the Quran. And finally, we have a comprehensive chapter, or at least a comprehensive title of the chapter. It is called Babu Majah fi al-Quran, which means the chapter which concerns everything which is regarding the Quran. And here we find, for example, the narrative which records the revelation of the Quran on seven ahruf. We also have a narrative which tells us that we need to revise the Quran frequently, lest we may forget it. And then we have another narrative which says which actually describes the situation and the state of the Prophet when wahi would descend upon him. So it is very strange that we find narratives relating to the Quran, and they have a number of information to tell us regarding the various aspects of the Quran. So why did not Imam Malik record the narrative of the collection of the Quran here? It would have been a very, very appropriate place. So its absence from this place is very strange. The second thing in this regard which Tamanna Imadi has pointed out is that besides Mu'atta, another very famous hadith book is Al-Jami'u Sahih of Imam Muslim. Now, he too has not recorded this narrative at all, which obviously is very strange. And this particular thesis of Tamanna Imadi is also very, very important. And I'd like to add here, this is important because we know that Imam Muslim was actually a student of Imam Bukhari. And his conditions of accepting a narrative were very lenient. And we also know that there are a number of narratives in the Sahih, in the Jami Sahih of Imam Muslim, in which we find Ibn Shahab Zuhri present. And there is also a section in his Al-Jami al-Sahih in which he has recorded various narratives regarding the Quran. So this section in Al-Jami al-Sahih is called Fazail al-Quran wa ma yata'allaku bihi, which means the blessings of the Quran and what is related to it. Thus, for example, in this section, we find narratives which depict the need for constant revision of the Quran. We find narrative which says the reading of the Quran in a melodious voice. We find a narrative which says that the Prophet was reading Surah Fath on the day Mecca was conquered. We find that the Prophet was divinely directed to read out the Quran to Ubay ibn Ka'b, رضي الله عنه. We have another narrative which says Abdullah ibn Masud, رضي الله عنه, recited the Quran to the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So, viewers, this is something very strange, that in spite of the fact that Imam Muslim is citing various narratives regarding the Quran in his book, but we find no mention of the collection of the Quran in his book. So this is the first thing which Tamanna has posited regarding the absence of this narrative in the early hadith works of Muslims. The second thing in this regard, he has pointed out that not only these early Muslim hadith books are devoid of any mention of this collection of the Quran narrative, he says that this narrative or this account is also absent in the earliest history books of the Muslims. And although some of them are not as early as we would imagine, but the first book that he cites is that of Tabri, Imam Tabri's Tariq, or his history. And he says that this narrative is not present there. He also says that this narrative is not present in Ibn al-Asir's Al-Kamil fi Tariq. And finally, he says that although this narrative is present in the Tariq of Ibn Khuldun, however, it is not present at its proper place. It is not present in its chronological place when it should have been there. It has been mentioned much later, where Ibn Khuldun has actually discussed the collection of the Quran in the times of the Caliph Usman. And it is there that this narrative has been, according to him, inserted, because perhaps people wanted to have this connection made between the copies which Usman had made in his times. So since this was not mentioned earlier on, so it is, according to his thesis, this narrative of the collection of Abu Bakr's collection, was inserted later on at the time where Usman's collection has been mentioned. Now, this is what Tamanna has posited in his book, Al-Jam al-Quran. Now, I would like to point out here that the lapse or the absence of this narrative in Imam Tabri's history or his tariq is a very, very notable thing. It's a very weighty criticism which Tamanna Imadi has pointed out, and it is something which needs to be noted. And however, as far as Tamanna's contention is concerned that this narrative was not found in Ibn al-Asir's Al-Kamil fi Tariq, then I'm afraid Tamanna Imadi is wrong here. he has not probably missed out the fact that there is a place in Ibn al-Asir's Al-Kamil fi al-Tariq where this narrative is present. So therefore, this contention of his cannot be regarded with any veracity. However, what perhaps may go in favor of the Manna is the fact that this book, we know Ibn al-Asir lived in the 7th century, or the 6th century. So this is a later Muslim book, and it cannot be regarded as one of the earliest works of Muslim history. Now, in this regard, what needs to be understood is that Tamanna Imadi has pointed out, obviously, one of the things that he's pointed out is that Ibn Khaldun's history is also devoid of this narrative, at least at its proper place. Said that this could be, although it could be a weighty criticism, however, it is not as much tenable or as much of importance as one would think, because again, Ibn Khaldun's history is one of the later histories, and again, this could be a insertion for many other reasons as well, which are contrary to the ones which the Manna has pointed out. However, the weight which the Manna's criticism carry is that this narrative is absolutely devoid, is not found in Tabri's Tariq. And Tabri's, we know, is one of the earliest Muslim historians. So as far as Tamanna is pointing out of the fact is concerned that the earliest hadith work, the earliest Muslim work of history, one of the earliest works, is devoid of this mention, he is absolutely right here, and I would like to corroborate his inference. Now, I would like to add certain other things here. And they are that besides Tabri, we find there are at least two historians who lived before Tabri. And one of them is Ibn Sa'd. Obviously, his Tabqat is a very famous history book, and in fact, one of the most premier history books, which predates Tabri's Tariq. And the other is Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah. Now, both these books are basically biographical accounts of various personnel of Muslim history, and they are stacked in tabaqat, or various chronological tiers in which these people lived. And it is very strange that both these books, Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah and At-Tabaqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd, both of them are absolutely devoid of any mention of the involvement of these four main characters which figure in this narrative. Now we have Abu Bakr there, we have Umar Ridhala Anho, we have Zayd ibn Sabit Ridhala Anho, we have Hafsa Ridhala Anha. So at least these four people, they are present, and we have the biographical information of these four individuals in these books, both these books. And lo and behold, we find that none of these biographical accounts contain any information or any sort of even any hint that these four personnel had any role in the collection of the Quran. And what I'm now going to do is, I'm not going to confine myself to just mere claims. I'm going to read out the important aspects of the biographical accounts of these four personalities from both these books. And you can see for yourself that there are a number of details which are mentioned by the authors, and these details are at times very trivial, and at times they're important. But common sense says that had these individuals had any role in the collection of the Quran, then this particular aspect should have been mentioned in their particular biographical accounts. So the question is, why was it not mentioned? So just to give you some idea of what these biographical accounts contain, so viewers, let me summarize the biographical account of Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu from the Tabqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd. Thus, for example, we find that in the biographical note on him in his Tabaqat, of course, Tabaqat of Ibn Sa'd, this begins with why Abu Bakr was called Atiq. We know his name was Atiq. This note also describes that he was the first to embrace faith and was 40 years old at that time, and that he traveled with the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam in his journey of migration, in his journey of hijrah. Abu Bakr accompanied him. Then the note also says that he participated in all the battles fought, that he was appointed the leader of the Muslims in Hajj in the year Mecca was conquered, that he led the Muslims in prayer at the behest of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam when the latter was dying, and that how people pledged his allegiance after the Prophet's demise. Now the note goes on to describe his physical appearance, the contents of his will testament, and how he appointed his successor. Similarly, this biographical note also describes his last rites and also his age at the time of death. And strangely, this note also records on the authority of Muhammad ibn Sirin that the Quran had not been collected when Abu Bakr died. So viewers, this is that short description of Abu Bakr's account in the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd. And you see that it has absolutely no mention of the fact that Abu Bakr had any role in the collection of the Quran. Now, let me move on to the Al-Ma'rif of Ibn Qutaybah. And it has a brief biographical note of Abu Bakr. And this brief biographical note on Abu Bakr mentions the details of his name, his family members, his embracing faith, people pledging the oath of allegiance to him, and lo and behold, there is no mention of his involvement in any sort of collection of the Quran. So both these early books, Al-Ma'arif ibn Qutaybah and Tabaqat ibn Sa'd, and both of them, as I had pointed out earlier, both of them predate Tabari, and both of them contain the biographical accounts of both these of Abu Bakr, and both these books do not cover or do not mention any involvement or any participation of Abu Bakr in the collection of the Quran. Similar is the case with Umar radiallahu anhu. We find his biographical notes both in the Tabaqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd and in the Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah. Thus, for example, we have a very detailed biographical note on Umar radiallahu anhu in At-Tabaqat. It gives details of his life before he embraced Islam. It also mentions the famous incident that led him to faith. His migration to Medina is also mentioned, and his participation in all the battles is also referred to. The note also mentions his appointment as the caliph. The austere and simple life he spent as a caliph is also alluded to. The note also says that he instituted the Tarawih prayers and describes the conquests that took place in his times, as well as his Hajj and Umrah expeditions. The note also describes numerous incidents that took place during his caliphate. It also contains two contradictory reports. One of them says that he was the first person to collect the Quran in Suhuf, and the second one says, and that when he died, the Quran had not been collected till then. Now, similar is the case with his mention in the Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah. So in this note it is said, we find details of his person and his family. We find his conquests and important incidents of his caliphate, like the great drought which took place. We know that a great drought had taken place in the times of the Caliph Umar. And again, if there is anything which is not mentioned in this whole biographical note, is any participation or any involvement of Umar in the task of the collection of the Quran, or the fact that he was the person who was actually responsible for having the Quran being collected, as the note says, because it was he who had advised Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Now, again, we also find Zayd ibn Thabit being mentioned in both these books, not only the Tabqat ibn Sa'd, but also in Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah. And again, there is the same story that we face here. There is absolutely no mention of Zayd ibn Thabit, who is the primary character. He is the person who is actually responsible for collecting the Quran, who undertook this task practically. And we find that both these notes are absolutely devoid of any involvement or any participation of Zayd ibn Thabit in this task. Thus, the note in the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd regarding Zayd ibn Thabit, although it is a short one, however, it says that there is absolutely no role that he played in this collection. Neither in the time of Abu Bakr, and we know that, as we shall see in some of the later sessions, that Zayd also had a role in collecting or copying the Quran or writing the Quran in the times of Usman. However, the note in the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd mentions that he had no such role, neither at the time of Abu Bakr nor in the times of the Caliph Usman. Now, we also find details in this note regarding the fact that Zayd learned Hebrew or Syriac in 17 days so that he could correspond with the Jews on behalf of the Prophet. He was regarded by the Prophet to be the most competent person in matters related to the calculation of inheritance. Umar anhu had made him a judge and would also entrust him with the responsibilities of state whilst he himself was traveling. Also recorded is the fact that he remained a judge, a mufti, and a scholar on inheritance issues in the times of Umar, Ali, and Uthman radiallahu anhum while being stationed in Medina, and that he died in 45 Hijrah. So this is that note which is found regarding Zayd ibn Thabit, and as I said, there is no mention of his involvement in the collection of the Quran. In Ibn Qutaybah's book, Al-Ma'arif, it is the short note in Al-Ma'arif is devoid of any such mention, even though it is mentioned that his Mus'haf was in accordance with the final prophetic recital done in Al-Arza Al-Akhira. So in other words, if the Al-Arza Al-Akhira or the final review is presented in this note or at least cited in this note, one would have expected that at least the collection of the Quran done by him in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr at least, or later in the times of Umar, should have found any mention. But unfortunately, this is not mentioned here. Absolutely similar is the case with the biographical notes of Hafsa, رضي الله عنها, both in the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd and in the Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah, they are not mentioned at all. And here I'd also like to add another aspect to this whole scenario. So besides the fact that all these four personalities, their biographical notes are absolutely devoid, they do not have any mention of the fact that these four personalities were involved in any way in collecting the Quran. So not only it's the fact that Ibn Qutaybah's history is devoid of any mention, not only Tabari's history is devoid of any mention, there are some other books as well which are of the same era and of the same period, and they too do not contain any such collection story or any such collection tale. And they are, thus for example, we find the Tariq of Khalifa ibn Khayyat. We know that Khalifa ibn Khayyat died in 240 Hijrah. So his book also does not contain this collection account. Similarly, the Tariq of Al-Madina by Umar ibn Shabba, who died in 262 Hijrah, that book also is devoid of any mention. And finally, the Akhbar Makkah by Muhammad ibn Ishaq al-Faqihi, who died in 275 Hijrah, that book too is devoid of any mention. Here I'd also like to point out one thing which needs to be actually gauged as well, because it would be a downright injustice if I don't allude to it. And that is that we find a historian, Ibn al-Jawzi, in his Al-Muntazim fil-Muluk, we know that it's a book on history. So Al-Muntazim refers to the fact that there is this narrative which is cited on the authority of Ibn Sa'd. So the whole narrative with slightly different details is cited by Al-Muntazim, and he attributes it to Ibn Sa'd. So the question arises that the extant versions of Tabqat Ibn Sa'd, as I've alluded to, they have absolutely no mention of this narrative. So why is it that Al-Muntazim of Ibn al-Jawzi narrates or cites this narrative? Obviously, this could have a number of scenarios. One of them could be that the extant work of Ibn Sa'd that we have today does not contain everything which was transmitted by Ibn Sa'd. And the other thing is that there could be some other books which have not have reached us, and those particular books would have that narrative. But the bottom line is that if this is the fact, then would it not challenge the fact what I've just said? Would it not say that this narrative was actually present? Since I've just cited these biographical notes before you, which say clearly that Ibn Sa'd's book is devoid of this narrative. However, a later authority of of the caliber of Ibn al-Jawzi, who has lived in the 6th century, he is ascribing this narrative to Ibn Sa'd and also narrating it. So why should not this whole premise challenge what I've just said? So my answer to this would be no, it does not challenge. Because even if we think that this narrative was there, it was found in Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd, we find that actually Ibn al-Jawzi has reported this narrative on the authority of Al-Waqidi. Muhammad bin Umar Al-Waqidi, we know, is an absolutely unreliable person, an absolutely suspect narrator. It is from him that this narrative has been ascribed. It is known that Ibn Sa'd has actually recorded this narrative from his teacher, Muhammad bin Umar al-Waqidi. And we know that Ibn Sa'd is his student. So in the presence of the personality of Muhammad bin Umar al-Waqidi, who is reported to be an extremely suspect narrator, as we shall later find out during the course of other sessions, so even if this narrative is found in the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd, since it is in this particular recording, we know that Muhammad bin Umar al-Waqidi is present, we therefore cannot regard this to be a reliable transmission. So viewers, all in all, in this session we have seen that the first point of criticism which has been raised by Tamanna Imadi is that it is highly improbable this whole event took place. And let me just summarize what Tamanna has said and also link up his premises. So Tamanna has said that in the presence of the fact that this narrative should have been reported by many people, given the gravity of the event, why was it reported by a single person? And not only that, but in the next two tiers of its transmission, we find single people. So this we have seen. And he further links up to the fact that such is the feeble nature of this transmission that we find that this narrative is not found in some of the earlier works of Muslim hadith and history. And he has referred to those works, although I have pointed out to some discrepancies in what he has said. But I have endeavored to show that by and large his premise is absolutely true, because one of the earliest works, or two of the earliest works which predate Tabari, and one of them is the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd and the other is Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutaybah, they too are absolutely devoid of any mention. And if we even concede that Ibn al-Jawzi has pointed out this mention in Ibn Sa'd, then that too cannot be regarded as tenable, because it contains the suspect personality of Muhammad ibn Umar al-Waqidi. So in the next session, we shall take up some of the other critical points which have been raised by various authorities vis-a-vis the text of the narrative, and then later on some of the other points which have been raised by them on the chain of its narration.